Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining us today. If you've been listening already, thank you for that especially. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. You're not going to be sorry that you did, I promise you. That's my promise to you, ladies and gentlemen. If you show up, we're going to make sure you not only have a good time, but we're going to make sure that you learn something too, if you want to learn something. And one of the ways I know, one of the reasons I know that that's the case, one of the reasons I can make that kind of a claim, which is because of our Brain Trust members. People like Dr. William Dunkelberg, our guest this half hour, and longtime member of our Brain Trust. Nobody has done more to understand and to help small businesses in what they do, if you'll just pay attention to what he says, than Dr. Bill Dunkelberg. Now, in, I guess, is it your fourth decade, Bill, that you've been tracking small business issues? And
I'm not sure how to count the decades, but let's say it started in 1973. How about
well,
that?
Yeah, well, I'd say, seven, eight, nine.
That would be four.
That's four decades, yeah. Hey, don't ever argue with my math, Bill. I've got this wired. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, former head of the Business and Economics Department at Temple University. Now, taking it a little bit easier as the professor of economics at Temple and also chief economist for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business, and one of our good friends. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
It's good to have you back. And what's the news from small business? What are they telling you this month?
Well, the ones around here are telling us that they lost a lot of money on the weekend because they had 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
No restaurants were doing the Valentine thing.
In Philadelphia. He's there in Philadelphia, folks. As you know, if you knew where Temple was, you already knew that. But you guys got a couple of feet. I've had actually, you're actually, I think, the third member of my Brain Trust that I've interviewed from your area this week.
And how about that?
And they've all had, you know, 16 to 2 feet, 16 inches to 2 feet of snow.
Right, but really we haven't had winter. We just had a winter storm, that's all, because snow is already gone. We've had 50 to 60 degree days since.
Wow.
So it melted off. Thank goodness I didn't do too much shoveling.
Well, maybe there was just a lot of, maybe that just created some pent-up demand, and they all went out and spent all that money that they were going to spend all at once.
Well, what we did see nationwide, of course, is that the mild weather that we've had really put a kick in housing starts. So a lot of our small businesses are busier than they normally would be because of the good weather. That's good news. And the overall optimism was basically January unchanged from December, and the higher plans to create jobs improved, and plans to add inventories stayed historically strong. They're looking pretty good.
You know, Bill, for the last year or more, I've been shooting down the hysterical people, the hysterical predictions about a real estate bubble. I don't remember if you and I've talked about it. We probably have, but I've been saying that there were some pockets, there were some maybe some blocks in certain cities that were going to be in trouble because they were flipping condos and things like that. But I've been minimizing that. I've been saying that I didn't believe that there was a serious housing bubble that would have any kind of a national negative impact. And I think we're starting to see, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're starting to see indications that I was right.
Well, I think that's certainly closer to what the truth that we will see than the people who worry about a big bubble. I mean, some of the strongest appreciation areas, you know, where you get like 40% appreciation, like down in Fort Myers where my little place is, the appreciation was on a very low base, so the median house price is, you know, around $200,000. If you look at places like in California, you know, you've had a lot of expensive homes. $400,000 plus is the median home price in California, and you know, there I think you got some pricing adjustments coming down there in Southern California. But in those other markets, you know, they probably won't see very much of a change. A lot of people moving into Florida. I don't know how many thousands every day move to Florida, but so there's strong fundamental demand there. And I've talked to a bunch of builders in this area, and they all think that everything is really fine. Their concern is not whether people are going to buy homes, but whether they can find any more land to build on, because the governments have either bought it all or locked it up with environmental regulations.
Well, they might want to check with Mr. Bush. I understand he's selling about 3 million acres across the country. Did you hear about that?
I heard
that
recently.
There's a new thing out. Maybe this is what you were alluding to earlier, Bill. There's some brand new news out about housing starts, and it's apparently the strongest in 33 years or something like that. Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. William Dunkelberg right after these messages. It's 20 till the hour. Mr. Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen. Mad Dogs and Englishmen. I think that's the name of that album. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Having a great visit with our good friend, Dr. Bill Dunkelberg. And Bill is graciously joins us every month to give us the news about this, the new report that that he produces every year. He polls hundreds, if not thousands, of small business owners every month to find out what they're thinking, how things are going in their businesses. He aggregates all of that. He adjusts it for seasons and gives us an outstanding report. It's available on my website. It's available on his website. It's available at thenfib.com. Bill, give us your website, please.
Smallbiz.org. That's S-M-A-L-L-B-U-S.
B-U-S.org. And
NFIB.com.
And we're anxiously, Bill, we're anxiously awaiting your book that we know is coming out any time now. We're looking forward to that. And folks, in my and I'm going to give you a little bit of a scoop. You know, Bill is, in my opinion, should be the next president of the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank. So, Bill, that's you know, from my mouth to God's ears. That's I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure that you have that offer. Now, whether you take it or not, that'll be up to you. But I will tell you, folks, Bill is the caliber person that he is on the short list over there. And so, Bill, we appreciate the fine work that you do.
Well, thank you.
Okay, let's get back into the report, and I want to ask you about inflation. I know that's over on your list a little bit, but inflation's been in the news lately, hasn't it? Mr. Bernanke's still talking about it.
It has, and everybody's
the new Fed chief,
the new Fed chairman, right? And of course, I think that if you just look at the consumer price index inflation measure, it's higher than we would want to see it.
What is it right now?
Last 12 months, for the year, the calendar year, was 3.4% increase in the cost of that basket of goods that we buy. The average consumer, who doesn't exist, of course.
Did that include petroleum?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah, and so for the year, it was up 3.4. That's not too bad, but we like to see it lower. Then we have the core CPI that has the energy out of it. That was up 2.1% for the year, and that is probably, getting into technicalities, that's probably 0.2 points higher than they would like to see it. They'd like to see it below 2. So there's not a lot of issue right now. The concern, of course, the Fed always has is not fighting inflation today because we don't have any. It's making sure that they don't have to fight it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the art of being an FOMC member and chairman of the Federal Reserve is, how do you do that without triggering a recession? That is, tightening too much, or not enough. It's one of those. It's the porridge story, Getting it just right is not easy, and it's a real challenge. And that's what the Fed has to do.
They're driving a long freight train, aren't they? And they've got to know miles and miles in advance which track to take, don't they?
Right. It's difficult, to say the least.
It really is. And I give them a hard time sometimes, but I never, ever minimize. I never diminish the difficulty that they deal with, the degree of difficulty that they have. I just think sometimes they're a little bit too predictable and a little too much of a Johnny One Note. They tend to go in one direction and stick with that a long time. I'd like to see them vacillate a little bit. I'd like to see them go up and I shouldn't say vacillate. That's not a real good word. But I'd like to see them, you know, maybe go up and down a little bit. But maybe that's because, you know, I don't think as far down the road as they do.
I think you probably are omniscient enough and prescient enough to be thinking down the road. The thing is that they you know, look out there and see where they want to go, but then, you know, the way they get there these days with more openness and all these kinds of things we talk about, transparency, is to kind of let markets know what they're going to do so the markets aren't surprised. So if they want, you know, we haven't gotten to this point yet, but they could come out and say, we want to get the federal funds rate to 5 because we think that's the right number. You know, then they could move there a quarter point at a time without blowing anybody out of the water in the capital markets.
Which, by the way, 5 is the number that I predicted they would get to this year. Let me ask you, Bill, how much, if petroleum, if gasoline, if crude oil, I should say, were $50 a barrel, $45 a barrel, $50, I say it's $50 a barrel, how much of an extra expense is it? Being over 60, is it costing us? Not just for the cost of gasoline, but isn't this the one big thing that's driving inflation, that's causing interest rates to go up? And so when we hear about gasoline being in the $60 to $70 range, isn't that costing us on many levels?
Well, you know, I think it probably is. I think what's you know, Mr. Bernanke referred to, and what many economists have talked about, is the fact that with such a huge spike in oil prices, we haven't seen it push through into serious inflation. That is, it seems to just stay in the energy sector. So if we look at the basket of goods that you buy, yes, we see that the price of gasoline went up, but the price of everything else in the basket doesn't seem to have been dramatically affected by it, which was kind of a surprise because we were worried that it would kind of leak into the price and the prices of other goods, and that would be inflation when the good prices started rising.
Because petroleum is the oxygen of the marketplace. I agree with you. I thought it would be more like that too, but yeah. It sort of demonstrates what you've told us before, Bill, and that every dollar of GDP this year is less dependent upon oil than it was 5 and 10 years ago.
Yep, it's amazing, but that's the case.
And so we're seeing it, being made manifest to us in front of our very eyes right now, folks. And so I'm going to congratulate small business owners out there because I think you had a hand in that. Tin Till, we'll be right back with Bill Dunkelberg. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. And you can find this report on my website in the Economic Survey section. We have two there, this one and the Tatum Survey. Every month we post these two new ones. Bill's got his own, and tell us again, Bill, where they can find it on your website.
smallbiz.org.
All right. And then also you can find it at the NFIB site, nfib.com.
Right.
Bill, what the most of the people that I know, Kiplinger and others, are predicting that the U.S. economy is going to create 1.9 million jobs in 2006. How would you say, based on the way your people are responding to you in terms of their labor requirements, how are they tracking so far this year in accomplishing that goal?
Well, 1.9, for the year, if we're looking at, we only have data on January, so looking at that, you would have to conclude that that's a low estimate.
Really?
Sure, because we did basically 200,000 jobs in January.
Hmm.
Multiply that by 12, that comes out to not 1.9, but 2.4 million jobs.
Right. And of course, you got to. It's always dangerous. I mean, it's not only dangerous. It's completely ill advised to annualize 1 month. But
it is.
But is January typically a good hiring month? Because it's not always a great business month in some sectors. Is it a good hiring month?
Yeah, it's not usually quite this good. But again, remember you got the warm weather, so the seasonals are going to be wrong. There are going to be more people working in construction than
right.
Kind of the seasonals think ought to be working there. So
and we did have the growth. We did have the growth in job starts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that the thing you. I mean
housing starts. I'm sorry.
We knew what you meant.
Yeah.
If you look at the January number, I would look at it this way. It's below the average for the past 3 or 4 months, which is 230,000 a month. So
mm-hmm. The
momentum is bigger than the January number that we got, and that'll probably be revised up. And, you know, so at least for the first half year, you're going to be running at a faster pace than the 1.9 million annual net new jobs. And, you know, we could slow down a little bit in the second half. Who knows? But I don't think that's going to happen.
But, Bill, that's 4 million jobs in 2 years. That's phenomenal, isn't it?
It's very good. We employ the highest percentage of the population age 16 and over in history, except for a couple of the dot-com crazy Y2K periods.
When we were overemployed.
We were overemployed there by a long shot. So, the employment record is really good. And, of course, it's not General Motors and Ford who are adding these new jobs. It's our small businesses out
there. Mm-hmm. Bill, the Ford, I think it was, recently announced a 30,000 employee layoff. People were wringing their hands, and I'm sorry for those folks. I really am. I know it's not good for those. You know, if it's a recession, if somebody else loses their job, it's a depression if you lose your job. But as you know, this economy replaces 30,000 jobs every 6 days.
Right, that's exactly right.
So, is it fair to use that kind of a thinking to sort of get over 30,000 job loss?
It is fair, and that's exactly what happens. And remember, these 60,000 GM Ford layoffs are spread over time and geographically.
And some of it's attrition.
Yeah. So basically, it's not going to have a very big impact on the employment numbers. And those are skilled workers, and with the manufacturing people just put out a study a while ago that said they were having a hard time finding people who had skills in the manufacturing sector. I think they'll be reemployed without a lot of trouble.
One of the pieces of news that I've seen lately, Bill, is that manufacturing is coming back strong in the United States. What do you hear about that?
Doing really well.
Tell us about that.
If you look at the ISM index that we generally follow, those indicators for manufacturing are showing that the economy is doing very well and that the small businesses, small manufacturers are hiring. And our data support that. We look at our manufacturers, about 10% of our membership. They're doing well on the hiring side, and they're actually able to raise prices, so they're doing well there. And they look very healthy. They plan to do a lot of capital spending this year, and that's a good sign.
And, Bill, these are 21st century manufacturing jobs and numbers. That's what I like about it. We've already gone through the pain, or much of the pain, of converting from 20th century models to 21st century. This is 21st century news, isn't it?
That's right. And, manufacturing is going to be like agriculture. I mean, every year we need fewer manufacturing workers to make the same output, and that's
right.
Good news because then we can pay them more.
Exactly. Hey, Bill, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you. Always
Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, he's the best, and we won't do without him. He'll be back next month. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and you know this show is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.